Hi, and welcome to Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. I also like to give a special thanks to Onyx Maps for help making this podcast possible. Today we have with us on the phone, well, you know what, he's one of my hunting idols, actually. He's a guy that I look up to. I feel that if I wanted to emulate anybody's career, he's definitely one of those guys. And he's always treated me with respect. Every time we've talked, he's never, you know, talked down to me, even though his resume is far surpasses my own. Always treated me as an equal. And it's Randy Ulmer. How you doing, Randy?
Yeah, pretty good. Thanks for the kind words.
Well, you deserve them, man. There's very few people in the industry that I look up to, and you definitely make the top of my my short list. So, well, interviews with the Masters. I get questions shot at me all the time. You know, via internet, via Facebook and Instagram, so on and so forth. And I start like saving questions and stuff like that. And once I've gotten enough questions about a specific topic, I set them aside and I find the guy that feels best suited to answer those questions. So that's part of the reason why I have you on the phone today. But before we jump into the questions, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm actually a veterinarian, equine veterinarian by profession. But got two kids, wife and two kids, my kids. One's in a sophomore in college in Colorado, and one's a senior in high school here in Arizona. And really love the outdoors. Been hunting since I was old enough to walk, and just have a great passion for the outdoors, and especially bow hunting and archery.
Yeah, you used to shoot a lot of tournament stuff too, didn't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's I guess that's really. I started out as a bow hunter and got into competitive shooting, and that's probably the main reason I kind of got a reputation is for my shooting initially.
Cool. So I mean, you started off really early in life, and you're. I'm assuming what you started hunting with your dad or family?
Yeah, our family hunted. We rifle hunted when I was very young. Our family goes way back, and we hunted for subsistence mainly. We weren't really trophy hunters when I was a kid, but my brother picked up a bow. We shot bows, but we really never hunted with bows till we were 17, 18 years old, and my brother actually picked up a bow first and went hunting and told me how much fun it was. So we started bow hunting very seriously after that, and we've just never quit. So we've been bow hunting for 40 years now.
Wow, that's almost about the time that I started really bow hunting, was right around that 17. Again, kind of like you, I got introduced rifle hunting. My dad and my uncles, you know, they rifle hunted back east for whitetail, and, you know, we'd go once, twice a year, you know, since I was real little, 5 years old, something like that, you know, chasing my dad around the woods. And then I picked up bow hunting on my own, like, 'cause nobody in my family did it. My dad actually bought me a recurve, way too heavy for me to pull back when I was really young, you know, like 12 or something like that. And then I had like one of those plastic fiberglass, you know, 20-pound longbows that you could shoot on either side of the rest type deal. And that's kind of how I started shooting. And then, you know, later in my teens when I picked up compound bow and started, you know, shooting more consistently, and then wanting to hunt with it and stuff. So,
I have one of those fiberglass bows. I got when I was 6 years old, and as a matter of fact, I've kept it through all these years. I still have it. You're right. You can shoot it on either side of the rest. And my kids shot it, and whenever I have a little kid over here, they still shoot that thing. It's lasted for, that's close to 50 years. So
is that like one of those, is it lime green?
It's lime green, kind
like
of striped. Yep. They probably made millions of them.
They still make it. I've seen them. I've seen them out there. I'm not joking. They still make it. It must be like, I'm not sure what company makes it, but I've seen them. I almost picked up that bow for my daughter because when she first started shooting, she started shooting at, no joke, at 2 years old.
Wow.
But I found Samick makes a little itty bitty recurve. It's like 12 pounds, I think, draw. But it's, tip to tip, it's probably 14 inches, 15 inches long. So it's real small and wieldable. And, so she started shooting that. And now she's seven. I just recently put her in a Matthews, Micro Mini, I think it's called. Anyway, but, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I'm glad that my kids are not into hunting yet, but they do like to shoot the bow. So, and hopefully it'll turn into that eventually.
Yeah, I have pictures of my bow kids at about 2 or 3 years old shooting, and they just shot straight up in the air and like to see the arrow fly. They didn't start shooting for accuracy till they were 10 or 12. Something about the, as Ted Nugent says, the magical, mystical flight of the arrow. They just love to watch arrows fly, and they'd shoot all my old competition arrows. They'd shoot about 50 of them down into the desert, and then we'd go gather them up.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. My oldest, Ella, she's like a, I don't know, she's a little OCD, so she wanted to shoot good from go. My other daughter, Olivia, she really, she could take it or leave it. She likes to just pull the arrow back and shoot it. They like, kind of like your kids are, just, enjoy to see the arrow going. But Ella, she gets pissed off when she misses. So she's real competitive. But anyway, I forgot to ask you, how'd you guys end up doing on that sheep hunt with your nephew?
Oh, really good. My cousin, Jeremy.
Oh, your cousin.
Ulmer, and he's very lucky. He actually drew a Rocky Mountain sheep tag here in Arizona last year. And I went and helped him, and he shot a very nice ram. He drew a desert sheep tag here in Arizona this year. And for those of you that don't know,
back
the odds
back
of doing that are probably greater than a million to one. And so anyway, I went with him, and he ended up killing a very, very, very nice ram. As of the 10th or the 12th, it was the biggest ram they had checked in the northern units, the Nelsona unit. So a beautiful ram. So he did well. He's got half of his grand slam, and now he's trying to figure out how to save up money to go. I don't know. I probably shouldn't say this because he hasn't proposed it to his wife yet, but he wants to start working on his grand slam, which is going to cost him quite a bit. But he's working on a dull sheep hunt now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least you got the most expensive one out of the way, the desert.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, he's off to a great start.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's cool. Did he do it with the bow or did he do it with the rifle?
Oh, both of them with the bow. Both of them with the bow. So he's a very accomplished bow hunter, and did real well. Did very well. Got two very, very nice sheep. I'm a little envious. Both his sheep are bigger than my respective sheep. So he did better than I've done.
Awesome. Well, so like I mentioned, I have some questions that get shot out to us. So. My first one is, what are the three things you attribute your consistent success to?
Well, and I assume, John, that you're talking about mule deer success?
Yeah, let's talk about mule deer. Yeah. I'm going to gear all these two mule deer hunting. I know you've quite the accomplished elk hunter as well. And at one point, you're probably noted for that above your mule deer hunting. But I'd say you've probably killed more big mule deer than anybody that I know. So.
Yeah. Well, for mule deer hunting, I actually, several things. Probably the most important thing for me is scouting. When I was, I've kind of structured my lifestyle or tried to structure it to where I could take time off. And back before I could take much time off from work to go hunting, I would just go out when the season started and hunt and didn't have a whole lot of success. But when I was able to take more time off, I started scouting a lot more and became much more successful. You know, the key to shooting a big mule deer, as you well know, the first step is to find a big mule deer. And, and you know, that's a little bit of a cliche, but it's really true. And I'm able to go out and scout a great deal now. And I probably scout for 30 days in the summer. So I would have to say the number one thing for me is scouting, is finding a couple of bucks that are, you know, worthy of chasing and then pattern them and then using that information once the season starts to try to harvest one of them. And second would be probably persistence. It used to be that if I would find a big buck and if I spooked him, I would pretty much in my mind think that it was over with that deer and that I would never find him again. And now, once I find a big deer, even if I spook him, I'll be patient, wait a few days, and try to pick him up again. So just kind of sticking with a big deer and knowing that they're not going to disappear, that they're actually going to come out again and you're going to find them again. So I think persistence would probably be the number two. And then, and one of the, I think number three, is the fact that I've done my very best to improve my shooting. And that's why I started shooting competition in the first place, is just to become a better bow hunter. Mm-hmm. And, one of the stories you hear over and over from a lot of people is, you know, they finally find a big buck, they sneak up and then they shoot and they miss. And not that I don't miss, I do, but, I do everything in my power to make sure that when I do finally get that shot, it counts. So number three would be shooting skill, right. Shooting preparation, having my equipment perfect and my shooting form as close to perfect as I can get it.
Cool. That actually kind of leads me into my next question. You said preparation. What are some of the things you do to prepare for a hunt? What are some of the things that you do to practice to become a better shooter?
Well, one of the things, one thing I've noticed in just watching my buddies and other bow hunters practices, they tend to practice in their backyard or say at a shooting league, and they always practice on flat ground, shooting at a given distance, and they do everything the same. And it's great because it teaches you repetition and teaches you what a good shot is. However, hunting situations, as we're all aware, when you actually get a shot in hunting situations, very rarely is it on flat ground with no wind, in perfect weather, broadside shot. What typically happens is you're leaning out around a tree, or you're standing on a rock and rising up above another rock or something like that. Mm-hmm. So what I tend to try to do is I try to practice different shots in different situations. And I tend to try to practice in the wind or in the rain or the environmental conditions that you're going to actually see in a hunting situation. Not only
right.
do you learn how to shoot, you learn the problems that your equipment will have in those different conditions. You learn to shoot, one of the things that out in the West here, as you well know, we have a lot of wind. And one of the things that it's done for me is I use a very small diameter shaft now, and I use very small fletching and mechanical broadhead just so that I don't have much wind drift.
Right.
So, you know, just practicing and getting your equipment in the conditions where you're actually hunting, as opposed to just what you're going to do in your backyard.
Yeah, I actually sound like a broken record because I'm always saying the same thing. I'm like, practice life scenarios. Practice for the game. If you're going to be hunting elk, you know you're going to be on your knees. You know you're going to be, you know, shooting from a seating position a lot of times, or kneeling or whatever. Or, you know, hunting mule deer in high country, you know you're going to be getting steep shots. You know, even from tree stand. If you're hunting out of a tree stand, you know you need to be able to be effective out of a tree stand. You're not standing 20 yards in front of a, you know, a hay bale, like you said, on flat ground. For years, I would always, you know, use a 3D, and I would actually stalk into a position that I knew was lifelike, you know, that I could get to on an animal and try to make a shot from that position. I think that stuff helped me out tremendously over the years. And hearing you say it, you know, just validates, I feel like, what I've been doing.
When you're leaning out from a tree, or if you're in a sitting position, you're going to find out that your arrow impacts in a different place than it does mm-hmm. when you're standing square and upright in a T-form position. And once you've discovered that, you can learn how to make that shot to where your impact point won't be different. And while we're on that subject, one thing that I've learned to do is most people practice, and their first shot's not very good because they're not warmed up, and they gradually kind of warm into their form and warm into their sights. One thing that helped me out tremendously when I started bow hunting is to just shoot one shot. I'd leave my bow in the garage, and whenever I'd walk through the garage, I'd just pick it up and make one shot. And interestingly enough, most people shoot four or five shots just to kind of warm up. And a lot of times the impact point will be different. Doing that taught me to get into proper form instantly, because your muscles aren't warmed up. Everything's different, but you can train yourself to make a good shot on the first shot. And really, in bow hunting situations, you already get a second shot. The only shot that really matters is that first shot. So I encourage people to just practice a whole lot of first shots. If you have a place where you can, even if you're, you know, at work or something, and you have a bale, even if it's only 10 yards away, you pick up your bow periodically and then just shoot a shot and learn to adapt into the best form that you can on the first shot.
That sounds like a really good advice. One of the things that I've done kind of similar along those lines is when I go out to practice, my first shot is always my last pin. So I always, you know, if my pins are from 30 to 80 or whatever, 30 to 70, I go out to 70 yards and my first shot is always my, you know, my bottom pin, so to speak, or my furthest distance, you know, if you got a slider or whatever. That I can shoot, because if I plan on making those shots, I know I'm not going to have, like you said, warm-up shots. You know, most guys will go, they'll start at 20 yards, take a few shots, they'll back up to 30, take a few shots, and then progress. I always, you know, make it my first shot is always my last pin, so I know that.
Well, and shooting a long distance accentuates your problems. If you can shoot a good shot at 70 yards, then you're going to shoot a really good shot at 20 or 30. So that's one of the reasons I like to practice at longer distances, because it accentuates all your mistakes and teaches you how to eliminate them.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the other things you do to prepare for a hunt?
Well, I kind of brushed on this, but one of the things I'm meticulous about is my equipment. I lost a lot of animals because something went wrong, you know, in the moment. So I really make sure my equipment's in good condition. I go through, especially right before an important hunt, I go through tighten down all the bolts, and I use Loctite on a lot of bolts, and make sure everything's in great condition, make sure my string's in good condition, my D-loop's in good condition, my releases are shooting well. if your equipment's in good condition, and the other thing I do to prepare is, and I've done this my whole life, is I make sure I'm in good shape.
Right.
And, you know, I try to work out throughout the year, and I've always been somewhat of an endurance athlete. I always do some sort of endurance competition. And really, especially hunting out here in the West for mule deer, it's important to be in good shape. Because people that aren't in good shape tend to want to go home after a couple of days. And if you're in really good condition, you can stay out there longer. You're going to enjoy it more. And when you do need to move fast, you can move fast. So keeping myself in good condition and my equipment in good condition are really two of the biggest things. And the other thing is, as far as preparation goes, one of the things that I had issues with a lot when I was younger, when I was you know, kind of hand to mouth, and I had to work a lot, was that when I would leave to go on a hunting trip, I always had kind of fire smoldering back home, and I always felt that I needed to go back home as quickly as possible. But one of the things I've done for preparation, more mental preparation than anything else, is making sure when I'm getting ready to go for a hunt, I've got all my fires put out, I've got everything in place, so that I don't have to be worrying about all the different issues that I have at work or at home, so that psychologically I'm prepared to stay out there without all the worries that I used to have. And it just allows me to stay out there longer and stay focused on the hunt.
That's great advice. That's actually something I've struggled with for a long time. You know, I've kind of made my business so that I can run it anywhere, as long as I have internet or cell phone service. You know, I've made it so it's a little bit more passive income. But having a family and all that stuff, it's still always weighing in the back of my mind. Let me try to get this hunt done with as fast as possible. So I could get back home, you know.
Yeah, and the family is a big deal because that's your family has to be your number one priority. And what I've tried to do is spend as much time and as much attention as I can while I'm with them, so that when I am gone, they don't feel that they're being ignored or abandoned. So. Yeah, it's especially hard with young kids. It's very difficult. It becomes easier as your kids get older, especially if they go with you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, if they go with you, then obviously it's a... Yeah, I kind of did that sometimes with this sheep hunt, you know? Like, I had the whole month, and I decided to take a sheep on the third day. Heck, I shot at one on the second day, and I missed them. I misranged them, but... And then when I got done, you know, we packed them out and everything. I said, why, you know, not that I was unhappy with the sheep, because I'm not unhappy with the sheep that I took. I was never about score or inches or anything like that for me. It's just that the experience was over. And I was like, I had all month. I already kind of pre-prepared my life, my family and everything that, you know, I could possibly be gone for, you know, 15, 20 days. You know, in the month of December, and I didn't, and I was like, oh, why did I do that?
Well, you know, but you know, let me tell you a story that'll make you feel better about your decision. I drew a Nevada desert sheep tag probably 10 years ago, and my brother and another buddy went up to help me, and I saw a really nice ram, not a giant ram, but a good ram, first day.
Right.
And I actually snuck up on him about 40 yards away, and I thought, you know what, this is the first day. I'm not going to shoot this ram the first day. Mm-hmm. Well, 21 days later, I was still out there hunting, and at that point, by myself. I was depressed, and I was worn out, and I finally shot a sheep, but it was a much smaller sheep than the one I passed up the first day. So, especially sheep hunting, you know, you shot a nice sheep, you had a good experience. Looking back on my situation, I wished I would have shot that sheep the first day, and you know, and cut the hunt short. So
right.
That's one thing about hunters is we're always second guessing ourselves. And unfortunately, we don't always get the things don't happen in a linear manner. You don't always see the best sheep later on in the hunt. Oftentimes,
right,
the best sheep early on. So you have to take the opportunity when it presents itself.
Yeah, true.
All right. So, what is your favorite time of year to hunt mule deer, and why?
That's pretty easy. It's, you know, the early season, late August, early September. And, you know, you'd think that it would be, you know, if you look at it logically, you'd think, well, you know, why, especially here in Arizona where you can hunt in the rut in December and January, why wouldn't it be in the rut? Well, what I found is in, especially in the high mountain areas, in the summer, I love to scout. I love to be in the mountains in the summertime. As a matter of fact, my most favorite time to be in the woods is in the summertime. I actually enjoy my scouting trips more than I do my hunting trips, because in scouting, there's no pressure. But I just love to scout. And the nice thing about scouting for deer in the summertime is when you find a deer, let's say you find it in July or August, that deer is probably going to be very close to that place when the hunting season rolls around the 1st of September. And that's not necessarily true later on. What happens is the bucks will move into where the does are. So you might scout a buck in November or early December, and when the rut comes around, he's not going to be there. He's going to be somewhere else. So because I enjoy scouting so much, and I think that's one of the most important things to actually killing a really good buck. And in the summertime, it's just great to be up in the mountains scouting. And then if you do find a good deer, like I say, he's going to be there when the hunting season rolls around. So that's why that is my favorite time. Plus, there's something about velvet antlers. Velvet antlers.
That's my nemesis, actually. You know, I don't have any really big bucks in velvet. I shot a bunch of, you know, young ones earlier in my tenure, you know, forkies and, you know, little 3 points and stuff like that. And I got one or two fours that are, you know, barely breaking 130 in velvet. But I don't have any big bucks in velvet. All my big bucks are from the rut. I love hunting the rut. And the reason why I love hunting the rut is because I love the time of year. I love the weather. But I understand what you're saying about being in the mountains and that time of year in the early season. I love it. But I've never had the time because I have a pool business. So, you know, July, August, I'm still on fire at work. So I do go hunting that, you know, when the season starts, but I don't have the time to scout like I need to find that exceptional deer. The other thing is too, is when it's hot outside and the deer are using the shadier slopes and stuff like that, where you pretty much have to glass into the sun. I cannot glass into the sun. I have a real problem with the light sensitivity, and I just cannot see, and it puts me at a disadvantage, where in the wintertime, they're exactly where I can look, you know, on the sunny slopes and, you know, and that stuff, and I tend to be a much better at locating them, plus I keep tabs on those throughout the year, and I know where the big doe groups are, and usually that's where the big, you know, where the big bucks come in, as you mentioned earlier. Velvet mule deer have been velvet. I don't have any velvet whitetail either. But I have the few that I have are you know, they're not very big, and it's been my nemesis. And I've tried the last few years, and the only buck that I ended up shooting shed his velvet the day before I got him. What are these?
You know, it's you kind of have to go with what your job allows you to do, and I've always been able to take more time off in the late summer because things kind of slowed down for me there as a veterinarian. So I was able to go out, and that's when I could actually go out and look. And but if your job doesn't let you, you know, it just doesn't let you. And the nice thing about Arizona is, you know, a lot of the northern units are open in late mm-hmm. August through September, and you can get out of the valley here where it's so hot and get up there where it's in the 70s and 80s. And
yeah, for sure.
And, you know, find a deer in August and chase him in late August.
Oh, yeah. I spent my first 10 years hunting here in Arizona, bow hunting here in Arizona, where all up north. You know, I primarily hunted around Flagstaff. I did a little out by, you know, between Payson and the White Mountains and stuff. But I never really had any. I shot deer almost every year, but, you know, there were always little dinky bucks that I just, you know, shot to shoot pretty much.
Yeah, Arizona doesn't, up on the rim country, Arizona Game and Fish doesn't manage for mm-hmm. Very much age class of deer and very high age class of deer. And so it's kind of hard to find a big deer up on the rim country, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've seen them. I've made stalks. I just never connected. And I used to run a lot of trail cameras and you know, I'd set up my own little water holes and stuff like that. And I try to tree stand hunt them. And they were there, you know, leading up to the season. And then soon as season would start, they would be there for the first 2 days. And if you weren't there opening day second day, the pressure of all the people showing up to the mountains that time of year blew them out of there. You know, they would not stay on that pattern. Yeah, that was messing me up. And it was partly because I think I wasn't searching out areas that were far enough away from the crowds.
Yes, exactly.
So I haven't been able to hunt in August, so, which is kind of a good thing, I guess, because I've been shooting deer in January for the last few years. So I didn't, or January, or I drew rifle tags and I shot coos and bucks in December or whatever. So I haven't done that early season hunt in a few years now, but I think if I don't score one here in January, I'm going to put some serious effort in getting myself a velvet muley in the early season.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you might want to try the Kaibab. They've got, you know, that's kind of coming back, and they're getting some pretty nice bucks up there.
Yeah. I hunted up there a couple times when it was, you know, over the counter, and you just had to buy the, you know, the stamp or whatever. And I aired, when I was up there, I aired on the side of Trophy Hunter, which I don't usually do. And I passed up some okay bucks, but I never really got on anything real big. I'm pretty good friends with Dwayne Adams, and he had helped me out years ago and gave me a couple spots and whatnot. And I was really hoping to get something exquisite being up on the Kaibab, and I never did. And then they closed it down and became a draw.
I don't know. Well, you're talking to the right guy there. Dwayne knows the Kaibab better than anybody that I know. I mean, he really knows the Kaibab.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's good.
For sure. All right. So I'm going to try to make this into a question here. What tactics? You're primarily a spot stalk hunter, so we're going to kind of gear this to that. What tactics do you prefer to use? Like, kind of walk me through a perfectly executed stalk. Like, what are some of the things that you do to make prior to going on the stalk, like planning it? You know, how do you prefer to have the wind, or what will you accept for wind? You know, we all have our, you know, everybody wants directly in the face, but, you know, what are you willing to give, you know, to give it a go at with type of wind, you know, give me your ideal conditions and whatnot.
Well, first of all, we'll start from the very beginning. What, in an ideal situation, I would have found the buck in the summertime, and I would have watched him and have an idea of, you know, where he lives, where he beds, where he feeds, you know, what basin he lives in, first of all. And then if I'm by myself, it's always better to have someone help you if you're able to have someone help you. But ideally, if I'm by myself, what I tend to do is I want the buck fairly stationary. So, you know, I'll wait till they bed down. And because if they're up moving around, by the time you get, typically I'm hunting in mountain country, so I'm spotting my deer from one hillside to another hillside.
Right.
And in order to get all the way up and around to them, you know, it may take an hour, it may take 2 hours, depending on the type of country you're in. So if the buck's up and walking around, it's tough to know where he's going to be when you get to the other side. So if I'm by myself, I'll typically wait for the buck to bed down. And I'll mark the, and if I can, if I have my cell phone with me, I'll take a picture of where the buck is bedded. So
right.
When I come back up over the other ridge, what tends to happen is, and you've done it, I know, and we've all done it, is, you know, it looks like there's no way we could not know where we were when we got to the other side of the ridge that the buck's on. But once you get over there, it never looks like it's supposed to look. So
right.
I'll really try to mark it well, and I'll try to take a picture so I can see how the ridge line goes down, or if there's a specific type of tree on the ridge or a group of aspens or something. So I can mark where I got to come back up over the top perfectly. And then once I've done that, you know, I'll come up to the top ridge. And I like to sneak in, you know, I'll take my shoes off. I like to sneak in my stocking feet. And I typically wear knee pads so I can crawl without killing my knees.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just try to crawl in. And as far as wind goes, obviously in the afternoons or in that once the sun comes up, you typically have thermals, but what really happens in the bigger mountains is typically as the day wears on, the wind gets more, the wind starts blowing. And
right.
So the thermals are overpowered by whatever the wind's doing. And that's mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems you have in the mountains is you tend to have a lot of swirling winds. So it can be very difficult, but I'm typically hunting one deer. If the situation mm-hmm. isn't right, if I think that this deer is going to bust me, I won't go on the stock. So
right.
even if I have to wait a day or two or 3 days to get the deer in the right position, because mm-hmm. the last thing I want to do is spook them out. But so I don't take chances with the wind. If the wind's not good, I don't take a chance. Unless I can go in. Like if the deer is just over the top of the ridge and I think I can basically almost run in there and come up over the top fairly quickly, the longer you spend close to a deer, the more likely you are to bust him. But
sure.
And what I'll do in situations like that is I'll get, say, 300 or 400 yards, depending on my hygiene situation. If I'm where I had just taken a shower that morning, then I can get within 300 yards or so because I don't stink as bad. And just wait for either the wind to change or the deer to move. Get in a position
right.
where I can kind of see where the deer is and just wait till it's a better situation. But if the wind's good, I'll go in there and get it done right away. If the buck's in a place, I can sneak up and shoot. I don't really like to sneak up on bedded deer unless there's a place where I can just – if I have to sneak – within the deer's eyesight, it's not going to work. If I can sneak up on the deer and get a shot without him ever having the chance to see me, then I will take that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you have help, you know, it's much better if you've got if you've got somebody on the other side of the hill that can give you hand signals, or if you are one of the people that use radios on your, in Arizona it's legal to use radios, then it's much, much better to have another guy over there telling you what's going on or giving you hand signals so that, you know, and my brother and I have a very sophisticated set of hand signals that can, you know, tell you exactly where the deer is, what he's doing, and how far you are away from the deer and the whole bit. We have signals to tell you if the deer is up and walking, in which direction the deer is from you and exactly how far, all with hand signals. So
yeah, for sure.
It's much, much more helpful because all of a sudden you're getting a picture of what's going on without having to expose yourself.
Exactly. I use radios. Any state allows me to use a radio, I'll use a radio.
Right.
I mean,
right. And, you know, some people, and I've got no problem.
People look down
some
at
people,
it all the time. But
some people, you know, Pope and Young doesn't want you to put an animal in the Pope and Young record books if radios are used. And some people frown on it, but, you know, it's certainly something that helps.
Yeah, for sure. It's, it can become a crutch. I notice this with my cousins, because they primarily only hunt here. And, you know, we use radios when we're here. I noticed this with my cousin on my hunt. I took him to Wyoming. And he's not used to looking at a deer, or we were hunting antelope at the time, actually, looking at an antelope and saying, okay, let me plan my stalk. And basically, he was getting lost getting over to the animal, because he didn't have somebody saying, okay, go left, go right, you know, directing him exactly where to go. It's always a big learning curve. I hunt all over the place, so, you know, there are plenty of states that don't allow it, and I've had to learn how to, you know, do without. It's definitely nice to have. I don't frown upon it. I mean, does it help? Yes. Does it mean that every time you go on a stalk, you're going to kill something? Definitely not. So they're still very difficult. And the guy behind the radio needs to know what they're doing too. So, you know, just having somebody on the radio doesn't necessarily mean it's going to help you any. Anyhow. Well, that's it. It's all I got for you as far as questions are concerned. Do you have any words of wisdom or anything you want to pass along to everybody?
Well, I don't know that I have any words of wisdom, but one thing I'd encourage, when, you know, as you get older as a hunter and as you mature as a hunter, the one thing I would say to especially young hunters is the one thing guys get real serious, especially, you know, if you just experienced it, but you just had a really coveted sheep tag, or here in Arizona, you know, you don't get drawn for elk but once every 5 years or so maybe. And what happens is people tend to put a lot of pressure on themselves to succeed or to be to shoot a big one. And trust me, I like to shoot a big one as much as anybody else. But the one thing I can say that I've truly learned over the last 30 or 40 years of bow hunting is to always have fun. And a lot of that depends on the people you choose to hunt with. One thing that I found is, you know, hunting is our recreation. It's what we do for fun. But a lot of people kind of lose that sense in their quest to be successful. They lose the enjoyment and the camaraderie and you know, the animals being successful in as far as getting a nice animal is kind of just the icing on the cake. I look back on some of my most favorite hunts and most memorable hunts, and they aren't necessarily the time when I shot something or shot something big. It was usually who I was with and what kind of time we had and just being in the outdoors. So I guess my advice is just enjoy the experience, enjoy the people you're with.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I've gone back and forth with this many times over the years where I've caught myself, you know, not enjoying my hunt because I was too focused on, you know, getting something big or whatever. And somewhere along the line, I decided I wasn't going to hunt. You know, you get this all the time, like this argument, meat hunter, trophy hunter type deal. And I tell everybody I'm both. I'm a meat hunter, I'm a trophy hunter, but I'm neither at the same time. I'm an experienced hunter. I'm out there for the experience, to enjoy everything about that hunt. And it's definitely made me, it's actually made me more successful, again, because you said, like you said, you don't put pressure on yourself, and you're enjoying the hunt, and you take something home every time. You take home the experience every time. even if you didn't fill your tag. So.
And people think that it, trophy hunting and having fun are mutually exclusive, but I would argue just the opposite. I actually have more enjoyment as a trophy hunter, and the reason I do is because if I were strictly going to shoot the first animal myself, first of all, I wouldn't get to stay out there as long. And the most enjoyment I have on any hunt is the scouting. And if I were just a meat hunter, or, you know, just going to shoot the first buck I saw, I wouldn't spend a lot of time scouting because I wouldn't need to. But I spend so much time scouting so many deer. I look at so many deer, look in so many basins, and that is truly enjoyable. And then I actually get to spend more time hunting because it takes a lot longer to try to shoot something of size. Mm-hmm. But if you can do that and not get so stressed out about the trophy, then you can get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good way to look at it, for sure. So, but you got any other, you got hunts planned for the rest of the year, or are you going to be hunting?
I've got a buddy, a buddy of mine from Colorado, drew a rifle coos deer tag, the trophy hunt, the late season. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to spend the week between Christmas and New Year's helping him up in Unit 23. So that's really about all I have. And we'll probably get out a little bit in January and chase deer out.
Nice. Good deal.
Good. Well, John, I appreciate you inviting me on your program.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being on. I really appreciate you being on. And hopefully in the future I'll have you on again. We'll talk about elk or something.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you. Have a good one.